Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So delighted to be joined on the line by Jim Calder, Lions tourist in 1983 and Scotland legend. Jim, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on your
No, absolute pleasure. How have you been keeping a close eye on the Lions tour so far? And what are you made of the performances that you've seen, particularly from the Scots involved?
I would say that, you know, getting more and more sort of enthused by it. I think initially, you know, sort of drowned out a wee bit by Wimbledon, you know, and the Euros in particular. And the Lions tour was, you know, wasn't quite, you know, front of mind, but it's definitely now. And I think, you know, we're coming up to the South Africa A match. That's we're speaking, so it's this evening, and it's you know, this is going to be a real test. And I think that's when it's going to get really interesting, because I think, you know, we've all seen some good rugby, but it's difficult to really work out, you know, how good is this Lions team given the opposition they've had so far, and they're going to just be catapulted into something completely different tonight.
And yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it was a bit of a shock just how strong the South Africa A squad the selected has been. But I mean, with selection for that first test looming, which Scots in particular do you think have the best chance of a test spot?
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know, in terms of the team tonight, you've got Harris starting, you've got Fagerson on the bench, and I would think Fagerson will definitely be in the squad. You know that would be he won't. I don't think he'd be a starting three, but he looks like he's the reserve, the second number three. Harris will either be in the test team or I don't think he'll be in the squad. It's just one or the other. He's I think he's confounded everyone. His defence is just remarkable, and you know, he really has performed well, and he you know, there's those, you know, looking tonight, those are the two that are involved. You've got Stuart Hawk, who's not really had a chance to perform yet, other than early doors when he was captain, and he's we all know what he can do, but he's just been a bit unlucky with the COVID situation out there, and you know, but we've got plenty of other players who aren't going to be far away. The other two that really will be close will be Rory Sutherland, and I'm not quite sure whether he's ahead of Wyn Jones or behind him. You know, I think, but it looks like Mako Vinopola is struggling a wee bit, so it could well be, you know, Rory's in the squad for the first test, and you know, I think and then you've got Ali Price, and whether he's on the bench potentially. You know, as Conor Murray looks like he'll definitely start. So it's there's still a bit to play for there, as the reserve scrum have. So, and then there's Doohan Van Der Meer, who must be loving it, going back to South Africa, and scoring all these tries. And I have a feeling he probably won't be involved. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, when it does come to test selection, whether they go for the six forwards and two backs, because they do that to match what South Africa did in the World Cup. You know, you're making it quite difficult to include too many. You know, you'll need a scrum half, and then you need someone in the backs who can cover as many positions as possible. And Elliot Daly looks the guy that can cover full back, wing, centre. He can also kick goals, and he's having quite good tours. So, you know, suddenly if Stuart Hogg's not in the team, you know, would he sit on the bench when there's only two spots? It's quite tight. I would still probably favour three backs and five forwards, but you know, tonight they're going with six forwards and two backs, so it'll be interesting to see whether they carry that through. Tonight's going to really, if we're speaking tomorrow, I think we'll be quite a bit more informed, because this is giving South Africa such a good opportunity to get a team in the park, and we're still not quite sure, you know, what our centre combination will be, where the back row. I mean, probably Hamish Watson absolutely deserves a mention. I think he's having a pretty good tour, and he was of course outstanding in the Six Nations. And Tom Curry's not really fired yet, but this will be a really interesting one tonight, whether Tom Curry comes through. You know, do you go for the good big in, or do you go for Hamish, who's not in any way, shape or form small, and he's got this immense strength. So, you know, I just think Watson gets more involved than any other number seven I've seen for a long time. So they're all doing pretty well. And then of course there's Finn Russell, so it's back to that point, they're two in the bench or three. Finn's got an Achilles heel problem. You probably imagine might not be involved in the first test because of that, but we're always thinking that we'd have Finn Russell on the bench to do something different when he comes on, which they would need to have three backs on the bench for that to be the case. Yeah, it's all getting quite interesting.
It's interesting the point you make about a few of those players, you know, either being starters or not being in the squad at all, and specifically on Hamish Watson, you know, putting aside whether he deserves to start, which I think a lot, like I agree with you, I think he does. Do you think Gatland will go with a back row that accommodates someone like Hamish Watson, or do you think he's likely to go for, you know, more of that sort of six hybrid role, and then Tom Curry coming in instead of Watson?
I think Gatland will, first of all, without being in any way bitter about the thing at all, you know, he will favour his Welsh the players because he knows them the best. And especially when it comes to the forwards, you know, I think Gregor will have quite a say when it comes to the backs, but I think Gatlin, being an ex-hooker himself and having been over this turf so many times, so it'll tend to be Faletau, you know, will surely be, you know, in the mix. If not playing, he'll be on the bench. Navidi's had a good tour to date. He's playing tonight. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. But Tad Byrne, it seems to be the outstanding back row player, and he can play six and he can play four and five as well. So I think, you know, I think he most likely will be in the number six, and Faletau will be eight. And then you're down to, you know, I mean, Curry's quite useful because he can play six and he can play seven, and they've toyed with him playing eight as well, and that might make the difference. I happen to think Watson could be a fantastic number eight, picking the ball up from the scrum and taking it forward, because he's so strong and he's proving, you know, even at the highest level, you know, he can make real yardage, but that's too big an experiment for them to be thinking about. You know, at this stage of the tour, but I think for future Scotland matches, he could well just nestle down at number eight on our ball and take it forward, and he'd take some stopping. So it's a long way of saying I'm not sure.
No, I think it's just capturing the quality in the squad, and I don't think anyone, you know, has really played their way out of the squad so far. So it's very difficult to call it, really.
And really, when the games have been relatively straightforward. You know, they were tested only in the last match, and then the scrum half got sent off, and then you know it was easy street. I mean, you've got seasoned internationals coming off the bench against youngsters who have nothing like that experience. There's very little to judge, you know. So tonight is really, really important. I think the general feeling is Vinopola is probably the one that's, you know, he struggled a bit in the scrummaging in the previous game, and so he's probably the one who's gone backwards a little. But virtually everyone else is, you know, they're fit and they're playing well. And even Josh Adams, 8 tries in 3 games, he looks like he's an absolute stick on. But then you've got to fit in Hogg, maybe, and you've got Liam Williams. Mm. He'll definitely figure. And then there's Anthony Watson, who's most people's favourite winger. So, you know, there's and then there's Doohan. So there's, you know, and the young Welsh lad. So I would think the young Welsh lad probably not, and Doohan probably not, and then you're down to the mix of the other ones.
And has watching the tour so far sort of brought back any memories of when you toured? I mean, what do you sort of recall about the build up to that tour in 1983? And sort of how confident were you of being in and around the squad and being part of that selection discussion?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, it was a very exciting period. You know, I think anyone who says, you know, as an internationalist and says, oh, I'm not really thinking about the Lions is not being 100% truthful. You know, it is the season, and it in a way, it's, I wouldn't say it tops off your career, but if you can play for your country, that's always the first thing. But then the Lions thing is just something just that wee bit special. So, you know, we were in Scotland. We finished that 1983 by beating England away. And of course, it's only just been taken, that record. You know, that was a big finish for us, and I think on the back of that, you know, well, eight of us were picked, and so, you know, it was a, you know, that game was very important, and so I wouldn't ever say I was confident of being picked, no, but you were thinking about it a lot, and you know, we were fortunate getting 8 Scots away, and of course with Jim Telfer as the coach, and I think that's probably one of the biggest differences now, because Jim Telfer was the coach. Backs, forwards, defence, kicking, you know.
Right.
He did everything. And so, whereas now they've got 4 or 5 coaches all with their different roles. And that's so different. So, I think now, you know, just looking at captaincy, for example, captaincy back then was a huge part of the role. You were very much part of the selection team. Mm. And you had to do a lot of speaking and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas now it's, you know, the captaincy is important, but with all these coaches, it's I think the captain's been crowded out a wee bit compared to back then. I think that's the difference between amateur and professional. But we were going to New Zealand in 81. Scotland had been to New Zealand, so a group of us had already been only 2 years previous, and we'd had a pretty good tour. And you know, a lot of us were hardened up by the experience. You know, for example, you'd be lying a ball in a ruck in New Zealand, you get the full treatment from all their forwards, and you learn pretty quickly what's allowed and what's not allowed. And that experience served us pretty well when we went back. It's slightly different, not the forwards, but like Roger Baird had a great tour out in the wing and scored tries, and you know, he was in great form, as was Ian Paxton. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the Scots boys played well, but Ian played in the Tests, and then John Rutherford played, and he got into the Tests. But it's an interesting thing when you go on a tour like that, because you're used to being picked for your club and your country, and this is the first time in my experience where I wasn't picked for the Test team, and it's quite a difficult thing to take. And I think they manage it really well now in the professional era, but in the amateur era, you just have to suck it up and get on with it. Fortunately, I ended up being picked in the third test and got some closure, if you like. But
yeah,
it was it's quite hard, and you know, it was the All Blacks. They so we lost the series, and after the, I remember, you know, the having a few beers with the All Blacks afterwards, and they actually couldn't believe that Ian Milne in particular wasn't picked
right
for the best team, and that was a mistake, and they also highly rated Colin Deans at hooker.
Mm.
And that was a difficult one because Kieran Fitzgerald was the captain.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a tough one. But to highlight how good Colin Deans was, when in 86, when there was a squad picked to go to South Africa, Colin was captain. So that was, you know, evidence how good he was.
Mm. And did you find, it's interesting the point about sort of the not being picked, etc., and being used to getting, yeah, getting selected. Did you find going into the Lions training camp and training alongside players from other home nations that it was a big step up, or did, seeing as the Scots had had such a great season before and were due to have a good season after, you all sort of felt as if you could hold your own?
Yes, I think I wouldn't say the training, because we had Telfer as our coach, we were used to that same guy. And so it was more of an education for everyone else in Scots. He was a fantastic coach, but he was hard on players, especially forwards. And so that was quite an education for some of the, you know, the other countries. And they ended up impersonating him, you know, out of sight and whatever, and it, you know, became, it was actually quite a lot of fun, but they really did, you know, respect him, that's for sure. And it's interesting because it's probably the toughest tour that Jim Telfer had, but probably the one that he learned most from.
Mm.
And and back then, you know, being Scottish, you tended to think, you know, the guys from other countries were probably a wee bit better, you know, because we weren't beating them all routinely. And of course, Wales had come. They'd had the 70s when they'd just been so successful, and England were always strong, and Ireland had won the Triple Crown in 82, so you had some success there. We still had our Grand Slam and Triple Crown to come. But yeah, I think, you know, you a wee bit trepidation, but after training and spending time with the guys, you just think these are good people, and, you know, they, one or two exceptional players, but in the main, you know, there's the you know, a squad of boys that were, you know, roughly similar, or so, you know, you any thought that they were, you know, you were below that level, they quickly disappeared. I was in competition with Peter Winterbottom,
mm-hmm,
who was only 21 at the time, but what an outstanding player he was, and, you know, that's why I didn't get into the team to start with. And in the third test we ended up playing together, which was great. But you know, Winters went on to, he was still playing the Lions in 1993.
Yeah, so yeah.
Like 10 years later, that's how good he was.
If you look at the, you know, just taking a look at the schedule that you guys were up against, you know, even although it looks completely different to the schedule that the Lions would have in the professional era, even for the amateur days, it seemed like an absolutely brutal schedule. I mean, you know, 6 warm-up games in 16 days before the first test. You're having to play the likes of Canterbury, Waikato in between the tests. Was there any sense that you were slightly hamstrung by that schedule? Or in just those days, did you just get on with that kind of thing?
Yeah, you did just get on with it. But there was a sense of lambs to the slaughter. I think at first, we had a midweek game, which was relatively straightforward. Then we're straight into playing Auckland, you know, in Auckland. And Ryan Fox and John Kerwin and the Whetton brothers, etc. You know, they were possibly the top team, but you know and wherever you went, people would say, "Well, wait till you get to Waikato, they'll stuff you, and wait till you get to Canterbury, they'll stuff you." You know, it was really that bit was, you know, quite brutal, to use your word, but you know, it's a. It was great fun as well. I mean, you know, I was saying to my brother Finlay earlier on today, you know, you know, people remember the Lions tours that were successful. It's true in any sport. And so our tour sort of came and went a bit. But for those of us on it, you know, we all had a great time. Some of us had injuries and, you know, etc. But, you know, it was in no way would I say we were just having a great time. You know, we trained really hard. And, you know, and in the first test we weren't far away. I can't remember the score, but it was only a point in it, point or two. And with all these things back then, it was your first test was your biggest opportunity, because you'd had 8 or 10 matches, and then suddenly you were, well, 7 or 8 games. Then you're, you know, so you had the chance to get the momentum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the advantage was with the touring team, and we were very close, but that was the closest we got.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that maybe if you look at it on the surface, it's a whitewash, as people might say, but actually the tests were all really close. I mean, having played in that third test, what do you think was the main difference between New Zealand and the Lions that decided those tight games?
Yeah, I would say, well, the first word that springs to mind is professional. You know, I think they were just better at it. You know, they're just more. They've been through harder games. You know, I think one thing we all knew, when you go on these tours back then, you'd be adopted by a school, and then you go and speak. You'd go and visit the school that's adopting you, and they would do a scrapbook for you throughout the tour, and you know they would lay on games. You know, just for you to watch, and you just got a sense of just, you know, how serious they take rugby, especially back then from a really young age. And, you know, we had nothing like that in Britain at the time. So you get to the age of 17, 18, you're a hardened player. By the time you're 21, 22, you're not a young rugby player. And you know, the level of competition that you've got to go through to get to become an All Black makes sure that when they take the park, you know, there's no mucking about. You know, they've already been through a really tough process to get there. So I think when they get chances, they take them. You know, I think we played well that day, and we weren't far away, but we still lost. You know, and I think that was a tough one, because you know, we, as I say, it was probably. Okay, the first test was a close one. I don't think we played that well. Third test, we actually played pretty well, scored a few tries, and still we weren't good enough. And I think it's that level of professionalism that they brought to the game, where they just made no mistakes. In severe weather, it was freezing conditions. It had been snowing, and it was tough going. But they just came out. You know, they just made less mistakes.
And in that third test that you played in, who were you up against, and what were your sort of main memories from that game?
Well, there was a guy I'm pretty sure he's been playing, because I played against him 5 or 6 times, called Mark Shaw, and he was they called him Cowboy Shaw. He was he worked in a slaughterhouse. Remember, you know, back then it was all amateurs. So yeah. You had a job and you trained. So he was a guy who just, you know, had a real physical job. I remember watching some highlights of a New Zealand-Australian game. It was the night before the match. And the Australian second row guy, Stephen Chappell Williams, had gone up in the air in a line-out, taken a beautiful turned catch and delivered it to the Australian scrum half. The next moment, he's been carried off the park because Cowboy Shaw, number 6, which is 3 from the table line out, he just had a whack at him, you know, and the guy was carried off. And it was, you're really thinking, cool, okay, tomorrow I'm up against this boy, and I've got to make sure he's not throwing the punches. And
yeah.
So that, you know, he was a tough boy, and you know, he wasn't like a Graham Murray or a Murray Mexted, you know, who were big names back then, who, you know, in terms of their quality of play, he was just he was something of a hatchet man, and he did it really well. So, you know, he was quite a boy to play against, but a great guy. And Mexted, I mentioned him, he was a real class number eight. I think the number seven was Jock Hobbs, who was a really good seven as well. He took over from Murray, who had been outstanding. And of course, the All Blacks just produced these number sevens. Richie McCall being probably the best example of them all. You're always going to, it's always going to be a quality area that you're going to be competing against. But it just brings you on. You just think, well, I'm going to have to be that wee bit better today than I've ever been. It gets your mind around it. So, as I say, we're still lost.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the most interesting things about that test is the fact that Roger Baird scored his one and only, you know, test try in that match, which I think is still just a pretty unbelievable stat. Do you sort of give him much grief about that record for having that sort of? I mean, it's a record that, you know, every man in the street would be very envious of, but is it something that you can sort of make fun of with him?
Well, I mean, Roger's a great pal, and. No, I've seen other people doing that, and I think ultimately, you know, there was a period there where, you know, a long time ago, where, you know, you'd be in a clubhouse and someone would come up and say something, and, you know, it was just it just got beyond a joke for, you know, a lot of us. So even though there was plenty of wisecracks, and, you know, he would have got his fair share as well from the boys, you know, I think in the main the rest of us knew how good he was, and he was a very unselfish rugby player. You know, he started off life as a scrum half and moved out to the wing, so he had all the skills in terms of give and take and two to ones, and quite often he was behind setting up Scotland tries, and you know, I didn't play in the game, but I believe he did score against Romania in Romania. And the referee after the game apologised for not giving the try.
Right.
It was a try. So, you know, there's a bit of a backstory there. But it's, you know, it's something that it's not really mentioned now much at all. But at the time, you know, it was definitely, you know, one of these remarks that would come up from supporters and, as I say, clubhouse. You know, chant, etc. But Roger had a great Lions tour, and he's a great Scotland player. So, and a fantastic sevens player.
I suppose more generally, what was the sort of the off field vibe around the squad? You know, when did you all sort of get together for the first time? Was there a chance to get to know each other over a beer, that kind of thing? Was the social side of things generally, you know, a positive on that tour?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, before we went on tour, I think we had a couple of nights in London, and we trained, and, you know, we'd have a few beers and, you know, bite to eat. And back then, you really didn't know the players the way the players will know each other now. Because, you know, when you think of the league that Edinburgh and Glasgow play in, you know, they're playing Welsh, Irish players all the time. And then the Heineken Cup as well, so they're playing some English teams and French teams. English teams, and so they'll know each other pretty well. Whereas we were, as I say, amateur days where you've got your job and you're training in the evening, etc. And your rugby was very much playing for your club against another club in Edinburgh or Glasgow or wherever. So you didn't really come across the opposition to the same amount. So the early stage sort of few drinks was important. But it wasn't. There was nothing contrived. It just happened, and people got on well, and pretty quickly we became a good squad of boys. You know, we out to New Zealand. You know, you would. I mean, the great thing about being a Lion back then is that, you know, if, say for example you're a golfer, if you went to Canterbury or Wellington or wherever you're going, you'd arrive there and it'd be a liaison officer and say, well, the golfers go can go tomorrow after training to the local club and really be a great golf club, and the members would all leave their golf clubs for you to use and lay on some drinks afterwards.
Wow.
And you know the fishermen would go out and do some fishing and you know etc. So you got a great chance to get in amongst the community and have a bit of fun and see the country. And that's, I do feel for some of the boys out in South Africa just now where, you know, they're sort of stuck in hotels. Sometimes they're in hotel rooms if they've got some COVID thing. And that's, in that bubble must be really hard. And I know it can work both ways, so it might harden them up, but it'll do that for South Africa as well. So it's not so that it's just the Lions that are going through the COVID aspects.
Mm. Yeah, it must just be just such a bizarre situation to be in. I mean, when you guys were sort of able to enjoy yourself a bit more, who were the sort of the main characters on the tour? Who are the guys that were driving that social side of things?
Well, there was a chap called Steve Boyle, and Steve was the second row from Gloucester, a great, great bloke. And, he was nicknamed Foghorn because he was loud. and he's everyone's favourite guy, but he would organise all sorts of hijinks, fun, the odd party here and there, and he was probably the main guy, and it was great because we had a 30-year reunion up in Northern Ireland a number of years back, and he was there, and he was just the same, and organised it, and I think probably off the 32-33 of us, there would be 24-25 all made their way over.
Wow.
And it was just great to sit there and reminisce a wee bit, but generally just have a bit of fun. And again, we on the golfing theme, Darren Clark was there, and he's a big pal of David Irwin's. And so Darren was in the bar beforehand up at Portrush and said he would give us a lesson the next day because we're all due to go and play at Portrush.
Mm.
So he was good to his word. He had a few Guinnesses, but he still appeared and he gave us a lesson. And I'm a useless golfer, but I was trying to do what Darren told me to do, which coincided with about four lost balls in the first two holes. So. I actually quickly put my lesson to one side, but it was great to, and it was interesting. Darren Clark was telling us how much he loved rugby. In his 6 years at school, he was a back row player, and he had to give up. He was due to be captain, and I think he was playing for Dungannon, and he had to choose rugby or golf, and of course he chose the right decision.
Yes.
He really had a real interest in all of the boys, and he knew his rugby. And, it wasn't just a professional golfer doing a lesson and disappearing. He enjoyed the chat.
That sounds absolutely amazing. And when you sort of had that reunion, and I don't know, sort of bumping into players that you were on that tour with, is there that, that look that Ian McGeachan's talked about, that sort of that, I suppose, bond that's always going to be there. Do you feel that in any way?
You do. I mean, I come back to the fact that, if you didn't win the series, or if you're not deemed successful, you don't have quite the same bond. But it's a little bit like going to a school reunion. I think someone sort of mentioned that, because quite quickly, you're back in amongst your wee group of pals from the tour. Like any social gathering, there's maybe four or five, six of you who got on particularly well, and then you find, here's our wee group again, and that was happening. So it's just human nature, I think. But excuse me, it was a tremendous weekend, and it did make us all remember that we'd all been Lions, and that was a nice thing, and well done to. David and Trevor for organising, and I think the Scottish boys, we all went, and you know, we said we would organise the next one. And of course, we've not done that, but you know, hopefully we will do something soon. But it was interesting. I remember speaking to Nick Jevons, who'd come out as a replacement. He was a big English role player, and he's a great bloke. And he, you know, he talked about the fact that coming out as a sub, excuse me, replacement, you know, he viewed the test players as being, oh, well, they're a bit special. And he really enjoyed the reunion because he said, you know, it was just a great opportunity just to, you know, there wasn't that competitive thing anymore. It was it was just, we're a bunch of guys who have been to New Zealand and we're still about and, you know, enjoying each other's company and talking about, you know, rugby and various other things. So that was a great, that's a great thing to do. And I think now, you know, when you look at the Lions, you know, it's just a different league. You know, the level of attention, media, the branding, all the sponsorship, the TV rights, you know, this is serious money now for unions, and that's probably why the two had to go ahead. But, you know, and ultimately the players are well remunerated, but they're, you know, I think most of us would still say, yeah, I think I preferred it back in the day. Because it was, I mean, I think we maybe had 4, 5, 6 media people. That was it.
Yeah.
Nigel Starmer Smith, it was one, and Ian Robertson was another. These are, you know, quite big rugby names over the years, but so they're quality guys. But they, you know, they kind of mucked in. They would come out for a few drinks as well. You know, they weren't looking for stories. They were just part of the squad, really.
Yeah, I was reading, I think Jeremy Guscott was talking about that kind of stuff and saying that actually you wanted to be best pals with the media guys because they were the ones that would take you out for dinner and drinks and pay for it, which I think is very different to how it would be today.
I think so,
Coming up to... coming up to... I don't want to keep you too much longer, so we're just coming up to kick off, Jim, but... What are your predictions for tonight and for the rest of the tour, particularly the test series? Do you think the Lions have got a chance?
I think they undoubtedly have a chance. I think it's a good squad, and I think, you know, ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, how many injuries, but also, you know, what part does COVID play in all of this? And I think both teams are going to have deep squads. And I think the very fact that the Lions are full of internationalists, I think their squad will be deeper. Having said that, the South Africa scrum in 2019 just scrummaged everyone off the park. And if we see a lot of that tonight, we are in trouble. And I think that was always the, when you saw that England, you know, the losing the World Cup, it was all down to, well, a lot was down to the scrum. Mm-hmm. And of course, Sinclair being out, you know, injured within 2 minutes, meant that it was a difficult one to properly assess. But I think, you know, tonight, that's probably the bit that's going to be the most interesting is how the scrum goes and the forward. I think in the backs we're in pretty good shape. I'm not convinced we've got the strongest sort of centre combination, but, you know, we've got a great back three. But then so is South Africa. And they're at home, and you know, we know they've not really played a proper game since September 2019. So, you know, they'll be desperate to they'll be treating this like a proper test match. And you know, I'm feeling maybe it might not go that well tonight, but I do think we'll win the series. That'd be my prediction.
Nice, like the sound of that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, great, Jim. Thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely amazing. Love the stories. And yeah, just thank you so much for telling all of them.
Okay, cheers, Matt.
Great. Speak soon.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.